Before we jump into this episode, this is James from Fringe Voices. I just wanted to let you know about Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free, and they have plenty of tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. In addition, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more places. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor, A-N-C-H-O-R dot FM to get started. Thank you. This is James. Welcome back to the Fringe Voices Show after a long break. Today I want to welcome Tim Holland, aka Sole, S-O-L-E, a rapper that now lives in Maine. We had a great actionable conversation about many different things. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you like it, and enjoy the show. So we welcome Tim to the Fringe Voices show. Tim's coming up to us live from Maine. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Kind of in a weird mood today, but that's life. Can't always be it's not always peaches, not always peaches and rainbows.
That's right, especially with all this crazy stuff going on. Before we get into like the whole
crazy, everything's fine. We live in a life is perfect.
It is so perfect. I agree.
America is, we are on top of the world. We are the beacon of hope.
So I wanted to just introduce people that may not be familiar with your music. Tim is a rapper. His artist name is Sole, S-O-L-E. He's lived in Denver, but now he's currently living in Maine. I got into Soul when I was listening to Selling Live Water and Bottle of Humans, and then I got into the Skyrider Band stuff. But I really dig the No God Nor Country, your recent album. And this might sound kind of generic, but I just wanted to find out like what inspired you to get into music? How did you even like who inspired you in your musical career and anything you wanted to talk about that?
What inspired me to get into music? I don't even know. What I usually say is that, I remember listening to watching some movie. And there was I think it was like a Fat Boy song playing in the background, and somebody was
Oh,
like, "As I'm
wow.
dropping my science in this lane," I'd like never really even heard rap before, and then I just started listening. I don't know, and then I just started seeking it out. I was just drawn in by the way this person was putting words together. And then I don't know, I guess around age 11 or whatever, I just started listening to Run DMC and Fat Boys and Beastie Boys. And I don't even know why or how, but I figured out how to loop beats using a double cassette deck where you record 8 bars of a 8 seconds of a beat and then pause it and then rewind it. And I used to just make loops,
Oh, wow.
when I was 12 years old or something. And I don't even, it's a mystery to me. It's just something that I did, and I did well. And I was my mother encouraged me to make art. My dad was like a heroin addict, so I never got into drugs or anything. And I just sort of, while everybody, all the other kids were playing sports or doing drugs, I was making rap songs and playing video games.
When did you put your first album out? What age were you?
I mean, I released my first manufactured cassette in 1994, Northern Exposure, Mad Skills, and Unpaid Bills. But before that, I recorded a bunch of demos and tapes and mixtapes. I had my 8th grade art teacher had a 4-track in her, or not a 4-track, but some sort of mixer in her closet that I found. And I was like, "Can I borrow this?" And then they let me take it. And I just started recording at home, over these loops and shit. What was the question?
Just like, how old were you when you first?
Yeah, 11, 12. I mean, like, wow. I had demos at like age 14. Basically, I was getting in a lot of trouble in school. Because I was like, as soon as I got to high school, like in middle school, I started getting known as like this really dope rapper or whatever. Okay. And so I had like a reputation. And then like that summer of like eighth grade, the DJ at the local dance club who lived down the street from me, Mr. Mix, Dale Dorsett, we realized, oh shit, there's this famous DJ who's friends with DJ Premier. He lives down the street. Like, oh, let's wow. go. Let's go meet him, you know? And so we like knocked on his door and, you know, he's like this, like, you know, old school black dude with dreads, you know, and we're like a couple of white kids. And he was like, and he just made us rap for him right there. And he's like, man, you guys are actually pretty dope. Like, you need to work on your emphasis though. You need to like, and he started like, she's like, instead of saying A to the Z, you say A to the motherfucking Z, you know, and like was teaching us how to like emphasize and shit. And so he got, because I wasn't old enough to even get into the club, because we were like, I don't know, 13 or 14, he kind of got us into the club to perform. And like, you know, that was like when white people were not welcome in hip hop. White people were not, like, there was Third Bass, there was Vanilla Ice, and like, that's it, and House of Pain, and that's it.
Yeah.
And so it was like this thing where like this little white kid just goes up there and just fucking, you know, the crowd was mostly black. I mean, I didn't even know there were that many black people in Maine, back then. But it was like, and all these people were just going nuts. Cause it's like, cause back then it wasn't just that, like, I could rap. It's that I was better than most people. I technically like could rap really fast and like, you know, I was like into Onyx and like really like Fushnikini kind of fast stuff. And so people would just see this white kid get up there and be like, what the fuck, you know? Mm-hmm. And then like, so I got offered a record deal there. And then like all this, like all that reputation from like winning this contest and getting this quote unquote record deal sort of followed me into high school. And so all those people who I beat in that rap battle were juniors in the high school I was coming into. And so like everywhere I'd go, you know, I'd have like these kids fucking with me, calling me Vanilla Ice, trying to fight me and shit. I got in so many fights that year, with everyone, like jocks too. Everyone just fucking hated me. And so like my aunt at the time in Miami, she was a lawyer and she knew an entertainment lawyer who, like somehow like she passed my stuff on to this guy. And, you know, like I remember like my mom bought me like a 4-track, demo recording, like, you know, for like $150, some guy agreed to like produce and record a demo for me. And then like, we sent that demo to my aunt and then she got it to Jermaine Dupri's company. And they were they were like seeing dollar signs. They were like, yo, there's no white person out there that raps like this. He's a kid. Like, that was when Criss Cross was like big. And so I was going to be like the white Criss Cross. And so I was getting in all these fights and I got suspended like something like 30 or 40 days in my first year of high school. And so my mom was like, you need to go to Miami, go meet these people that your aunt knows and see if like this dream could actually be real. And so I went down and then, you know, they offered me whatever, I think like $150,000 for like a exploratory demo deal with So Def's management company. And it was like, you know, gonna happen. And then my father didn't trust the situation. And because I was a minor, he sort of like called the company and blew it all up. And and then like, but you know, I mean, that's a blessing. Like, that's one of the best things that ever happened to me, because if I had signed with So Def back then with what I was doing, I certainly wouldn't be the person I am today. I'd probably be, you know, robbing banks or, you know, some like washed, like even more washed up.
Vanilla Ice.
yeah. Just something sad. You know what I mean? Like, cause like, it's really not good to be, I don't think it's good to be famous when you're young. You know, I think it like really corrupts your brain. It takes a certain amount of like intentionality and shit to like really navigate that. And I think that like, like kids who are famous, like, you know, like they're fucked up by it. I mean, everyone's fucked up by fame. Let's be real. But so, yeah, that's, I mean, that's like my origin tale. I mean, it's like, you know, and then from there, I just been like relentless, basically. I just kept going and I just believed in myself.
Yeah. And I think what I also like is about your origin story is that your, seems like your mom and some of your other family really encourage you to continue with this dream. You know, some parents don't even care, or like they'll say, oh, that's fake. Or so I think that was kind of cool too, that your family really encouraged you in this journey. And yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, we wouldn't have the soul today who gets to do whatever he wants with his music. You get to say whatever you want. You don't have like, you know, like an overlord looking at your lyrics or whatever. So what advice would you give to young kids that want to get into music these days?
Honestly, don't. Just don't even bother. Like, it's so, the music industry is so fucked up now, that I would just tell people don't. You know, if you, you know, it reminds me of like the Razzcast quote, to my people with skills who can't get a deal, remain anonymous. You know, I feel like, you know, music has been devalued so much, that like, if you really want to make music for a living, you basically, you know, it's a different game than what I grew up in. It's like me and bullshit now. And it's very like, art is like the least consideration. You know, it's like, it's all about like how you look, what, like how your identity can translate to like a target demographic that, and by identity, I mean like any kind of identity, like, you know, I'm a skateboarder, you know, like whatever. Yeah. And so it's like, it's not like when I grew up, like, you know, it was like, keep it real, no gimmicks, you know, like that was what I thought music, that's what I think music is all about. Like none of the bullshit. Like, I used to hide my face so people didn't know I was white. And so I guess what I would say is like, you know, in anything you do, you know, it's always a question of like, how do you want to spend your time? What brings you joy? You know, how can you get paid to do the things that you love? And so I think like with music, it's like, if I was a young person right now, if I was talking to, you know, 16-year-old soul right now who wants to be a rapper, I would say like, you know, find something that can actually pay your bills that doesn't require a lot of time, so that like you can actually enjoy making your music and not like put all this stress on it. Because just like if you want to be a full-time musician in 2020, you basically need to be prepared to like tour 9 months out of the year, because that's like the main way that people are making income now. You know, yeah, sure, there's like people who, you know, sell records and make a lot of money off that from streaming, but it's like to even draw like a minimum wage from streaming, you need, I don't know, like fucking 10 million streams a year or some shit. And like, you know, the way the algorithm is going, because of these corporate, you know, like it just came out yesterday that Spotify is actually not profitable. And so now they have to figure out a way to make money. And their way of doing that is by offering advertisements to the labels and artists. So it's like, basically it's going to become like a net sum game where artists are paying Spotify so that people can hear their shit. But the whole point of like being on Spotify is to get paid when people listen, and now they like invert those things. And so it's like, you know, I just don't think it's a good time to be a full-time musician. And I, you know, I would just encourage people, like, if you do want to go that route, you need to have multiple revenue streams that aren't necessarily reliant on your brand, and or, as a musician. And I would say have a great live performance, like learn to play an instrument, figure out things that you can do that will truly set you apart from everyone else. And if you really, really want to do it, like, you got to play the game to win. You know, you can be as DIY as you want. You can be as fuck the bullshit as you want. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, me removing my music from Spotify doesn't expose me to more people. You know, me not engaging with Facebook and all this, like, bullshit, it doesn't, like, opting out of all that stuff doesn't bring more people to your art. Like, you have to be willing to do all the shitty things that are required of artists in this hyper-real, hyper-information-based attention economy. And like, again, it's like, it's just not, to me, it's just not what being a fucking artist is about. Being an artist is about art, you know, and the fact that, like, musicians now have to be, like, a successful musician is really a successful marketing person in today's, and same with podcasting. I mean, like, anything you do, it's like, if you want to be good, you need to figure out, if you want to do well and reach people, you have to figure out a way to use all these corporate mediums, algorithms, social media sites to your advantage. That in itself is a full-time job. So,
oh yeah. And one thing that I wanted to switch gears a little bit is, speaking of art, I really dug your new album, No God Nor Country, especially the Outsider song and then the Godless song. Could you speak about your like, what inspired you for this particular album?
I mean, you know, the album title, No God Nor Country, is really a statement about embracing the uncertainty of our times. You know, philosophically, I have, like, my ideas, or my, like, I guess my thoughts on, like, social change and revolution have, like, evolved to the point of, like, you know, beyond thinking about, like, a quote-unquote revolution, like, to overthrow the government and, like, fix everything, because that's, you know, didn't work with Lenin, it didn't work, like, so many of these revolutions in history kind of end the same. And it's like, when people talk about having a revolution in the United States, like, what are they really talking about? Like, a tiny group of people seizing power, you know? And then you still have all those baby boomers, all those liberals, all those Democrats, all those right wingers, all those depoliticized people, you know? And what do you do with all those people, you know? Yeah. So for me, it's a question of, like, how do we like instead of having, like, this certainty that, like, history bends towards justice, and if we just bang our head against the wall harder and consistently, that, like, change is going to come. It's like, what if the world can't be saved? You know, what if we are, like, what if the rising of the tides is going to happen faster than social change and revolutionary awareness catches up with the times, you know? Like, and so, like, following through with those thought experiments, it's like, so let's not pretend anybody fucking knows how we're going to navigate this century. You know, let's think of, like, prefigurative things that we can do in our day to day that spread resistance, build awareness, build autonomy, build capacity for struggle, and build and show examples of liberatory capacity. So, like, you know, songs like Outsider, you know, are, like, basically, like, me saying, like, yo, I've been doing this shit my whole life. I never gave a fuck. No one told me how to do my shit. I don't fucking want shit from this dead ass world. You know, and yeah, I mean, the only other thing I'll say about that album is, like, I don't know. I think it's like having kids. It also is like me processing having kids. Yeah. It's recorded over, like, a really long period of time where Pain One sent me beats over, you know, a period of, like, 2.5 years, and I would just record all these songs, and so it's really like markers of where I was at. Like, at one point I got a 6-month-old, another song I'm like, I got a kid on the way, another song I'm like, you know, we had just you know, whatever, been hanging out in our yard, and then I come in and record, and it's like, when you have kids, your thinking changes, like your wiring changes in your brain, like, you know, neurological shit happens. And so it's like, and that's interesting to me. I now feel connected to everyone who's ever had a kid, you know, everyone who's had a kid under late stage capitalism, like the experience that you have with your kid and I have with my kid, are similar. Like, we both, help raise our kid. We're both involved in co-parenting, and it's not, like we made a choice to not put our kid in daycare, you know? And like, you know, that's like part of the whole thing of like smashing patriarchy is like, you know, being a present dad, you know, like that's fucking awesome, you know? But just being like connected to that, like, you know, before I had kids, like people who had kids were like dead to me. You know what I mean? Like, they were part of like a different universe that I wanted no part of. And like, how sad is that? Like, kids are the best, you know, kids are awesome. And so it's like, again, it's like, I want to like imagine like, what does multi-generational struggle look like? What kind of world are we leaving for our kids? Like, how, you know? So yeah, so that's it. It's like, embrace. That's what No God Nor Country is like, no God, like no one is coming to fucking bail us out, in like no country. Let's not try to fix the United States. Let's try to build something in its ashes, and fuck it. You know, let's go. Let's roll. Like, let's, you know, let's fight the power, but like, let's build. You know, I feel like the quote unquote left in North America, in the United States, is just really reactionary. And after 10 years of like banging my head against the wall, I want to actually start building things that represent the world I want to see, that can help contribute to actually bringing down the walls and sustaining struggle and opening the realm of possibility. No God nor country, only my son can judge me.
Yeah, man, I really dug this album, because like you said, when you, I mean, my wife and I weren't thinking about having kids at all, and it's a little personal, but it was an accident that we had a kid, and it's definitely changed our lives. And I feel you on the, it changes your brain chemistry, everything. You totally think about the world differently. And speaking of what you were talking about, some sustainable change and all of that, what are a few things that you want to see happen, like within the next 10-20 years, if you have an idea of that?
I mean, you know, part of like being in a rural, semi-rural area, it's like also given me like a different ideas about struggle. Like, so much of like my own thinking has been based around like cities and turning cities into ungovernable zones, where like the state, you know, power can't function, you know, making it impossible for business as usual to function. And like, while I still think that's important, I think one of the reasons why, outside of Standing Rock, Occupy Oakland, and like a couple, and like the airport shutdowns, which lasted for a minute, and like the uprisings in Baltimore, the prison uprisings, like we've seen really cool, inspiring acts of like sustained resistance in North America over the past 10 years, you know, some really inspiring stuff, but nothing that's really like sustained itself and like started to like carve out, you know, autonomous territories like we've seen in like Chiapas or Rojava, or even like, you know, the way that like in other parts of the world, like you just have like autonomous centers and stuff. So what I want to see is I just want to see people building things, you know, like, for instance, like social centers. Like, there's a real lack of like radical social centers that are like open, inviting, and like really linking struggles together and building revolutionary capacity. You know, I want to see more social centers, but I want to see social centers that don't necessarily look like a bunch of punks, you know, reading zines, you know, like I want to see social centers that are like, you know, inviting to people and like not based around like subcultures or creating new kinds of subculture that aren't maybe necessarily based around you know, maybe based around like anarchist or autonomous ideas, but are presented in a way that like brings more people in. So that would be like one idea for cities. Like I look at places like 1882 Woodbine in New York as like a really good model of like the sort of prefigurative, you know, it's like one minute they'll have like a CrossFit training or a sailing class, and then the next minute they're doing a theoretical talk on society and the spectacle, and then teaching people how to ferment foods. And I think like linking like all those things together and like building the capacity for survival, like being able to produce your own food, knowing how to do it, knowing how to do it well, knowing how to store food, knowing like food, I think is critical to building revolutionary capacity. Like we will not be able to sustain our movements if we can't feed ourselves. Food being a huge part of that. I think, you know, I think cities suck. And I think whatever we can do to like draw people out of cities and to develop new forms of life. Like I'm really into this idea of the urban to rural pipeline. You know, like one of the projects that I've been like working on out here is like a cooperative land, project where, you know, people, and it's just something we've been talking about, but it's like, and we're like hosting our first meeting, like discussing and presenting our proposal, but like, you know, you get a bunch of people who want to like go in on some land together and do winter crops. You know, you grow storage crops like squash, potatoes, etc., and carrots, beets, whatever, stuff that stores well in the winter. And then you have like a collective that, you know, every Sunday we all get together and we get together together, listen to some music, whatever, drink some tea, smoke some joints, drink a beer, play in the dirt, have some fun. And then, you know, then at the end of the season we all walk away with like huge crates of food. And so it's like, you know, in one way, it like, it's fun. It like builds community. It builds community around something material, something tangible, something that pushes capitalism further. The more food you can provide, the less money you have to spend. And so like these sorts of things, like these sorts of like autonomous approaches, you know, learning how to use, I want to see people learn how to use herbs, you know, like, I mean, fuck, if people knew how good elderberry was for them, like elderberry is one of the most successful, treatments for Ebola. And as we're looking at like all these spreads of new diseases and shit, it's like, man, every motherfucker in the world should have elderberries growing in their backyard. It's so easy to harvest elderberries and make a cough syrup to just have in the winter for when you're sick, because like you have a kid, you can't give your kid cough medicine until they're like four or some shit. Like, so like those are things. But you know, again, it's like, there's always this line to walk. You know, like I'm sick of white spaces, you know, it's like, I can't sit in a room and talk about revolution with a bunch of fucking white dudes. Like, that's not revolution. That's just like a bunch of people talking and like, cool, that's, it's fun to talk, but it's like, how do we get beyond ideology? How do we bring people together? How do we bring people together over material things that like are real, that have real life impacts, you know, like, so looking at the Black Panthers, breakfast programs, childcare, like there are a lot of really huge tasks ahead of us. And like, yes, it's great to like protest. It's great to shut shit down. But like, people also need to be honest about like, who's really burning shit down in the United States? Who's really fighting the cops? You know, like, I've seen cops get punched a couple times, but not really, not like they fucking deserve. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, when we look at like, who's like, I'm talking about like Baltimore. I'm talking about like Ferguson. They just lit up so many cop cars.
Yeah.
And it's like, they weren't anarchists, but they were acting in, you know, anarchist ways. And so it's like, how do we draw that sense of struggle out of people and like remove it from ideology and identity and like, you know, tie it in with like what's happened you know, throughout history and all over the world? I mean, these are huge questions. And for me, it's like, I'm not really one for, you know, telling people what I think they should do. I know what I want to do. I know a lot of what I want to do is based around food. I think food forests or forest gardening and like public orchards, anything we can do to just increase like food autonomy and food resilience is, and to give people that connection to nature is going to go a long way. And that's like a really simple thing, but I like food because it just disarms people, you know, like one of my favorite memories was going to this place, Tarnac, in France. And it's like where a lot of the people who are inspired by groups like the Invisible Committee have like formed a community, and like they had these just unbelievable gardens and greenhouses and herbal medicine gardens. And like, you know, when I showed up, I was just so excited with what they were doing. And they were like, here, and they gave me a jar of green chutney. And I had never had green tomato chutney before. I didn't know you could even do anything with green tomatoes other than fry them. And so I took the chutney home and tasted it, and it was like incredible. And it was like such a simple thing. And then like every year after that, whenever I have green tomatoes, I make just tons of chutney, and I just love giving it out to people. It's like a beautiful gesture. And also it's like a challenge. It's like, what do I do with green chutney? You know? And it's just shit like that, you know, just like stuff that's like stuff that catches people off guard. You know, you never know what's going to be the thing that changes someone's life, that like snaps them out of their magical thinking that like the ship is being, you know, things are going to get worked out. Things are going to be okay. Things are not going to be okay. So how do we get people to like, A, know shit's fucked up and know that shit's like more fucked up than we probably imagine? And how do you get people to like act on it and to like build in that direction? Like I'm still asking these questions because I feel like I still haven't seen enough in the States that rises to the occasion that we find ourselves in. So I just think it's a time for experimentation and interrogating like how our ideas are linking up with our real life practices.
Yeah, and I like how you bring the food and agriculture and aspect into it, because one of the reasons why I'm living in New York, I have kind of a backwards path from you. I kind of grew up in the country and was like farming and, you know, raising chickens and all this stuff. But then I was like, oh man, I'm so sick of living in the country. I want to come to the city and shake shit up in the city, and kind of got out of the food movement for the past few years. But actually, and I'm not even lying on this, it seems like you're like kind of like evolution with like growing food and the food forest and how passionate you are about food is like getting me back into the agriculture and getting me back into the food movement, because I do agree that food is like so important to it's like the basics of life, but also it has like such a cultural component, and people have real memories surrounding food. And I'd like to explore this more, because one thing that I've always thought too is that food should be a human right. Like, why? I mean, it sounds crazy, but why should we even have to pay for food? It should be a human right. Like, it shouldn't be like a market surrounding food and all this. So just to piggyback on that, and then yeah, so, you know, one thing you also mentioned is that the tides might rise before any of this revolution happens. Speaking of that, what are your thoughts on, like, the coronavirus and what's going on with that? Because it seems like it's just, like, amplifying. I know it's even impacting New York City, their school shutting down, and it seems like it's going to have a big impact, maybe not right now, but within the next few weeks or months.
Well, just one thing I would say, just to close off the food conversation, not that I would ever want to close off that conversation because there's really nothing I would rather talk about. But if I was living in a city, and again, just with kids, you know, it's like a whole different thing. But like, you know, you can get these Amazon LED lights You know, like I got some LED lights on Amazon, like 7-watt lights, and I use them to grow microgreens in the winter. And you know, you can get like, you know, just like a thing of, from Johnny's, you can get like a big thing of arugula and like a big thing of kale and just have like two and some, you know, peas and sunflower shoots. And like, you can just have all these different kinds of like shoots going in your house in the winter and at all times on a little shelf on a, with these little LED lights. And like, it's great with a kid because it's like my kid is always just climbing up and just eating fucking arugula microgreens. And he is just, that's you awesome. Know, about that shit. And so it's just like, you know, from like an economic standpoint, parenting, you know, if you want to have something that's fresh, like get some shitty little Amazon LED lights and, grow some microgreens in a corner. I mean, I used to like hate on microgreens because I thought it was like some yuppie shit. And it is kind of, but also it's like, fuck it, they're there. Like somebody's got to eat them. Like, might as well be me, you know? But so with the coronavirus, you know, I don't really have a hot take on it. I mean, my hottest take is like, joke. yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, I grew up like kind of like my parents were like influenced by like my mom was like really into Edgar Cayce and like his like sort of apocalyptic Armageddon sort of thinking. And so that's like part of my DNA is like growing up like just constantly, you know, with like whatever, with my dad being like a fucking drug addict, like just like growing up thinking like the world's gonna end and like seeing it in your house and then thinking the outside world too. And so I just always have that feeling like it might not, it's probably not founded, you know, like, you know, sea levels might rise, you know, 5 or 20 feet by the end of the century, but like, you know, humanity will still be around for, you know, probably for a very long time, hundreds of years. Like capitalism might still even be around 100 years for fuck's sake, you know? And that's what sucks, you know, it goes out with a whimper, not with a bang. But like with the coronavirus, it's like, yeah, it's a symptom of, you know, interconnected trade, people living. I mean, again, it's like the city shit, like people living that cramped together, like in subways. Like, I hate that shit. I just think it sucks. Like, I don't know why anyone would want to, like, there's nothing that makes me want to be like in a crowded ass space like that. Like, human beings naturally, like, should be able to like go outside and look at a tree and to not be like crowded, like millions of people living in like that close proximity. And then you add all the other shit going on with like animals or however like the coronavirus started. It's fucking sad. You know, it's sad that like capitalism and human societies have evolved to this point where like we're becoming like these incubators for fucking diseases. You know, I think that like, I'm curious, like, what role vaccines play in the coronavirus and, like, over-vaccinated. Like, I came down with something, like, 3 weeks ago. I was, everyone in the house was throwing up. I had shivers, chills. It felt like, I mean, it very well could have been, you know, like, a touch of coronavirus. And, I mean, that's what's fucked up is, like, you know, we've heard all the stories about people who can't get tested in the United States for the coronavirus. And so it's like, and now it's in every state. It's in like 30 states. And it's like, oh, we don't know where these people got it from. It's like, you stupid motherfuckers. It's because we don't have socialized Medicare or whatever. And so nobody goes to the hospital when they're sick.
Exactly. And even if, you don't want to miss work or like you don't want to pay the copay or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, it's like the thing like it that like it brought it back to me is that like I needed to, like again, like I'm not rich. So I'm always like in Maine, actually, like groceries are so expensive that it's like I live in Iceland, basically. Yeah. And so I've been meaning to get on my bulk game for a minute now, but then when coronavirus hit and the CDC was like, oh, everybody should have 30 days supply of food and medicine, I was like, fuck, I'm supposed to be an anarchist doomsday prepper. I don't even have you know what I mean? Like shit. So I ran out and got like, you know, a bunch of rice, ordered a bunch of soy curls on Amazon, got some, you know, a month supply of medicine for my kids and for myself, and, you know, stocked up on emergency, just buying a little extra of like my favorite vegan or gluten-free products so that, like, you know, I think there will be some supply chain disruptions. You know, but I it's just fucking sad that, like, we live in a, like, we have, despite the joke I made at the beginning, which was, is kind of a fucked up joke and, you know, whatever. It's just like, it's just funny to me.
Okay. It is kind of
funny. You know, like, we're like, everybody, it's like the president's like, oh, it's no big deal. It's like, it's no big deal. There's a 2% to 4% fatality ratio with this disease, and 20%
now. Like, it could mutate too.
Yeah. And so like 20% of people are going to get serious, are going to need to be hospitalized over this. I mean, that is fucking crazy. Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you're over, I think 60 or 80, you have a 15% chance of dying. I mean, that's like, that's just crazy. You know,
yeah.
My friend, Margaret Killjoy, another member of the Channel Zero Podcast Network, has this podcast called How to Live Like the World is Dying. And I really liked the podcast she did about coronavirus. She had on like a health expert, a health worker from the UK, just sort of talking about, like, you know, basic shit, like, you know, in any sort of situation, you know, what's going to keep you alive is not being the lone individualist who goes off in the woods with their guns and ammo and grains and waits for the world to end. Like, we have to build resilient communities. We have to, like, know our neighbors. We have to look out for each other. We have to develop relationships of mutual aid. Like, we have to do that. And because it's like, if you're sick, who's going to bring you food? You know?
Exactly.
And so it's like, it's a good time to, like, check in on friends who live alone, you know, to let them know, like, hey, you know, if you come down sick, let me know. I'm happy to run to the store for you, but you don't even have to do that. Just get a Whole Foods delivery from Amazon. So a little life hack I'll pass on, it's, you know, nuance. But yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It scares me. It's scary. You know, I have a baby in our house. You know, like, I work out of the house. I don't really go out and interact a lot. But my wife works at a school, you know, who knows, you know, what she could bring home. It's scary. I mean, it's scary. And, like, it bothers me to see all these, like, cavalier takes from people who are like, oh, here's how many people died of the flu last year. It's like, yo, run the numbers. Like, 40 million people had the flu. So we're talking about a 0.01 kill ratio. This is 2,000 times more fatal than that.
Exactly.
This is more fatal than the Spanish influenza. Don't be cavalier, despite the joke I made. Like, can't be cavalier about fucking people dying, you know? Like, that's...
No, it's true.
It's scary.
Yeah, because honestly, at first, I had no opinion on it. I wasn't even paying attention. I think I even had some of those cavalier thoughts, too. But now, it's like, it's getting more real because, like, even the school I work at, it's closed down because of it. So, it's, it's pretty crazy, and it's going to be... It's going to be crazy to see how this plays out, too, especially during this political, the elections, the primary elections, like people going to want to come out and vote and all this. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I did want to conclude with that. Like, what I noticed on Facebook that you voted Bernie, which is awesome. And it kind of surprised me, too, because I didn't think you would go out and vote. And this is just coming from not knowing you, like, extra personally, but just from your background. So do you have something you want to talk about with that?
I mean, look, yeah, I voted for Bernie. You know, I'm not sure I could bring myself to vote for Biden. Maybe I would, you know, being out here, you know, I probably would. I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. I just know that, well, first of all, I don't think Bernie can accomplish any of the stuff he's talking about. I don't think he'd have the support to do it. But I just looked at it like I've never voted in a primary. I never really would. You know, I do all kinds of insignificant shit all the time that doesn't matter. Like the traditional anarchist thinking is like when you vote, you give your agency over to the state. I don't think that that's logical. I'm not giving agency to anyone. However, I am looking out for my kids. I've seen the disparity of like healthcare and how fucked up Obamacare is. I think Obamacare is fucked up. Like, just like I'm a technical person and navigating these Byzantine, like online, like marketplaces. Like for years, I would try to do it, and then I would just fucking quit, give up and be like, fucking find me. I'd rather be fined than pay $400 a month, which is what they had me paying, pay $400 a month for something I can't use. And it takes me 10 hours to figure out how to use this goddamn website. Like, that's fucked up. So like, yeah, stupid. You know, and so it's like, it came down to like, I don't want to vote for Biden, but I find myself on the sidelines, like, wanting Bernie to win, you know? And so I have like this cognitive dissonance in my mind where I'm like, voting is bad, but then I'm like rooting for Bernie. And it's like, you know what? Then fuck it then. I live in like a semi-reactionary place, you know, where like, you know, people out here think Biden would be a good president, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucking crazy. Like, the guy can't even form a sentence. He's not even running. He doesn't have a single idea. He just keeps saying Obama's name over and over again. And so I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to suck it up, and I'm going to vote for fucking Bernie in the primary because I hope he wins. Because I would like to go to college. If college is free, I will fucking go to college. I've always wanted to go to college. You know, I never could afford it. It's never worth the money to me because I don't want to have to turn around and get some shit job I hate just so that I could like study fucking postmodernism or whatever, you know? I mean, that's like, you know, I just look at it like, you know, diversity of tactics, you know, living in a place like Maine where like I've seen the laws that they've passed locally have kept major corporations out of most small down towns. Like I've seen the way that like local cottage laws enable local farmers to thrive and do better. And it's like, yeah, the state sucks. And like, yeah, like I'm not going to like go out there and campaign for Bernie. I'm not going to tell people to vote. I'm not going to like, because it is a tiny thing. It's like, as the Black Rose Federation put it, like it's an insignificant individual choice akin to recycling, you know? Mm. But it's like, guess what? It's better to recycle than to not recycle.
True.
You know, is recycling going to stop the Pentagon from producing 50 million tons of CO2 every year? Nope. You know, but it's maybe it's a piece of plastic that some dolphin doesn't choke to death on, you know?
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, I don't like, it's not really something that like I just think like, you know, I see people putting so much energy into arguing about why we shouldn't vote. And it's like, who fucking cares? How about this? Like, I'll vote if you meet me on the fucking barricades. Like, if you promise to fucking fight back and to actually go out there and organize and agitate and fight for the things that we need in this world, I fucking vote. It took me 10 minutes. I don't give a fuck. I'm still organizing. you know? And yeah. like, and it's like, and that, and that's part of it for me is like, keep maintaining that, like rather than like fall back on like platitudes that I don't really believe, about like, you know, certain anarchist, platitudes, like, you know, giving agency over. Instead, it's like, you make such a big deal about voting. Like, look at all the energy you put into talking about Bernie this year. He fucking lost. Now we have Trump again, or we have Biden, who's just Trump light, you know? Like, and so what? You've wasted all this time talking about Bernie, and this, and arguing on Facebook and all this shit. It's like, wouldn't that time have been better spent doing anything else? So it's like, for me, it's like, fuck it. Who cares? Go vote. Don't vote. I don't really fucking care. But because I don't live in like a hard blue state anymore. I don't live in Denver, you know? No, I live in Brunswick, Maine, which is like, you know, New England liberals are would be fucking right wing conservatives in most parts of the country. You know, you talk to a New England liberal, and it's really hard to tell the difference between them and the fucking less racist Republican, to be honest. So I don't know. I mean, I don't really have any clear thoughts on it. It's not something I made a big thing about. It's just something I did. Just to say, you know, when people are complaining or talking shit like 2 years from now, it's like, no, I didn't fucking vote for Biden, but guess what? I did fucking vote in the primaries for Bernie. And, so go fuck yourself. I'm out here doing this and this and this and this and this, and you're still at home posting on Facebook. Like, get out there and fucking do something, because voting is like the least you can do. You know, it's fucking nothing. So yeah, I voted. It was nothing.
Well,
if I go to anarchist hell and Emma Goldman won't let me into heaven, I'll accept it.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the conversation we had today. I'd like to do like a part two later on, because I still feel like there's so much to talk about. But then at the same time, speaking of, you know, like, really giving our thoughts on stuff. Is there any, where can people find you on the internet, and also your podcast? I would like to link to that in the show notes. So where can people find you on the internet, and is there anything else you want to leave people with?
You can find me on the internet. You can go to soulone.org, SOLEONE.org. You can sign up for the newsletter. That's the best way to stay in touch with me. You know, you can listen to my podcast, The Soulcast, on Spotify, and iTunes and all that shit. And you can subscribe in RSS. Awesome. If you want to check out my music, you can go to soul, SOLE.bandcamp.com. All my albums are up there, all 7,000 of them, spanning 100 years of blood, sweat, and tears and bile. You know, what would my thoughts be? The parting thoughts? Take a fucking deep breath. Shit's, you know, you are the shit hitting the fan. And, yeah, we gotta fight back. We gotta build. We gotta think. You know, I guess my final thoughts would just be like, you know, people want to change the world, like, doing the same shit over and over again, expecting the same results, isn't gonna work. So be experimental, be joyful, be militant, be cool, be kind, have some fucking empathy. Don't put up with any shit. No one gives a fuck. Who gives a fuck? Fuck the police.
I love it, man. Thanks so much for joining the show today. And, you know, I encourage everybody to follow the evolution of Tim, aka Soul. He's a great guy. All right, thank you so much.